What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Lyricast Snippet. After taking a break last week, I say take a break, but really I just didn't do it. There was no intended break. It was just a little worn out. I'm almost done with this Lyricast refresh, and it couldn't come soon enough because I'm not sure how much more my brain could take at this point. The hardest thing, of course, is it's not just doing the work. Everyone does that every day, but it's having to manage the Lyricast business itself and do the content, and then also have time to work on the refresh and deal with the annoying CSS. Oh my gosh, I'm so tired of dealing with CSS. You know, it always annoys, we've talked about this a little before, it always annoys me when kind of the more like hardcore developers are down on front-end developers, or you're not a developer if you use CSS. I just want to say, shut up, you have no clue how difficult it is. There are so many things that have to be taken into account, and it's not fun. Just the responsive aspect alone is incredibly difficult. You know, maybe you use something like Bootstrap, and you get a lot of that functionality out of the box, but that's just because somebody else did it for you. If you're doing it on your own, it's very tough. And you know what? Even if you are leveraging Bulma or Bootstrap and you get some of that mobile-first bonuses or perks where you don't even have to think about it, where, you know, like on a mobile layout, all of the grids just go to 100% width, so you never have to deal with that. But yeah, even on top of that, it's still tough. I mean, just imagine you're working on a layout and, I don't know, you have two columns and on a particular piece of text, maybe the left column, you're like, oh, you know what? I want more space from that right column. So I'm going to set padding right to 100 pixels. Even that alone, not going to be good for you, because as soon as you reduce it to a mobile layout, well, suddenly that 100 pixels of padding right is going to look really weird, and you're going to have to reset that to 100 width. So yeah, it's like you need to use media queries all over the place. Or for things like that, I've made religious use of helpers. Little things, like we've talked about this before. So for that, you might have PR-3, and that might mean padding right 3Ms, you know? Those little utility classes I've had enormous use out of. And so then, if you don't want it on mobile, maybe you could do something like PR-3-tablet. And so what that means is, in your CSS file, you would set up a media query for a tablet width, and then there you would define the class and set padding right 3M, right? So that way on a mobile layout, that class will never take effect, but for a tablet or a desktop, presumably, it would take effect then. But yeah, those are the sorts of things you really have to think about. And I know tons of people are very huge on mobile first design is maybe how they would refer to it. And I think that's great. I feel like in practice, it's kind of hard, right? Because especially if you're working from a PSD or you have this design in your mind, it's kind of hard to say, okay, I'm going to start with how it looks on mobile. I try to do it, you know, I get that it makes perfect sense to do that, but I don't know, it's hard for me. My instinct is more to design it the way I envision it full size, and then as I'm working, I check it on mobile and ensure that everything lines up. But yeah, I totally get the idea there. And trust me, if you don't even check it on mobile as you're working on this, you're in for a world of hurt. You know, back in the day, we had to deal with IE6 and IE7 issues and bugs and little hacks you had to do, like the underscore hack. So you may not know this. Back then, if you preceded a CSS property with an underscore, so you might say like underscore margin left colon 1, 10 pixels or whatever, that underscore would only be interpreted in IE6. So it was this hack you could use to target that browser specifically. And you might be thinking, like, why would you do that? You're never supposed to target individual browsers. Well, you know what? Easier said than done. Sometimes back then, you had to do it because in every other place, it would work fine. It's just IE6 had these bugs. There were things like double margin bugs where it would just double the margin. You know, there were box layout bugs. It was pretty terrible back then. And even there was one for IE7 where you precede it with a star, and then that would only target IE7. So I remember writing CSS where you would have your ideal setting, and then the underscore version for IE6 to fix an issue, and then the star version for IE7. And there was even one for IE8, but I can't remember. I think it was something like a backslash. That one wasn't quite as common because IE8 was a big step forward. Obviously still lacking in many ways, but a big step forward from what we were dealing with before. Trust me, it was a really good feeling when we were able to say, yeah, we're done with that. So anyways, I don't know why we're always talking about CSS here. I guess it's just because lately I've been writing a lot of it. And I'm one of those people, like, I hate CSS. I've made it as manageable as I can with my current understanding of things, but it's so hard. Especially, you know what? I would write PHP or code or complex domain stuff all day if I didn't have to deal with this. But yeah, that's one of the things with Laracast or running your own business, if you have one, is you kind of get to do it all. And you know what? A lot of businesses, I think we've talked about this too. I'm running out of topics. Shut up. But yeah, a lot of businesses, I see this all the time where they get a little bit of traction and all they want to do is just hire, hire, hire. Which is so weird. I don't get that mindset. Maybe it's greedy, but my mindset is more like keep it as small as you can for as long as you can so that all of the money that comes in is yours. You know, you hear so many cases of these businesses that once again, they get some traction and they grow and grow and grow. And you find out 2 years later, they're not profitable. And you're like, what? How? This is not some Silicon Valley business. This is just a small thing you started here. But you ended up hiring 6 people as quickly as you could, and you're not profitable, and you probably haven't been able to take anything out of the business, right? Because the mindset is everything goes into the business. So any profit, you know, beyond what you need to survive goes back into the business, into hiring. And I don't know what I'm talking about. I guess that makes sense, but it does seem a little crazy to me. Yeah, for me, it's at all costs, keep it small. So that worst case scenario, like if Laracast just blew up or some competitor just destroyed me or the server blew up or there was some huge, these are the junk I think about at night, like the database gets hacked and really it would be fine. Everything's encrypted. But you know what I mean? Just worst case scenario, if Laracast disappeared, I want to know that I was able to make some money off of it. I took some money off the table and I didn't fully invest it into trying to grow the business at all costs. Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, the side effect to that, though, is you do end up having to do a lot of this stuff yourself. And that's where being a developer, if you have a little bit of front-end experience, it's going to take you so, so far. You know, we often kind of mock the quote-unquote jack of all trades. For starting your own business, it is a very, very good thing. I know incredibly smart developers, like brilliant developers who have been around for 2 decades and they couldn't build you know, a half decent website because they don't have the front end experience. And you know what? It hurts them. It really, really does hurt them because they're not able to do these things without having help. But having said that, yeah, like boy, is it a lot of work. I mean, I'm sure you've done this too, even if it's like your own personal site, it doesn't have to be a business. But when you think about all of the things you have to know. You know, I did a whole Laracon presentation about this. And I do feel it as I work on these projects where it's like, oh my goodness, it's amazing. Like, it's magic what we do, if you think about it. If that the simple fact that we're able to get any of this shit to work, it is pretty insane because you know the phrase about how if the world only knew how the largest websites are just hanging together by a thread. That's this sad truth that we all know is true, but we don't think about it too much. It's pretty scary. And wow, I can't imagine working on some of those massive projects. You know, like you got to think about, we're all over the place today. You got to think about what kind of developer you really want to be, because there's nothing that says you have to work on those monstrous, huge enterprise applications where if something goes wrong, you know, the business goes under or millions of people lose whatever it happens to be. It's too much stress for me. Like I'm really happy working on small to mid-sized stuff and open source projects where the stress and the anxiety is relatively very, very low. Could you imagine being one of the people responsible for like Bank of America's finance platform or something like that? I mean, if something goes wrong, and you know it does. You know what? My personal bank, obviously it's not Bank of America, but it's a local bank, completely doesn't work. It's unbelievable. For 5 months now, if you go to my local bank's online portal and you sign in on Chrome, not a single thing works. It almost boggles the mind how this could be the case. And because I'm a developer, I keep sending them annoying bug reports because it drives me nuts. I can appreciate that it went down. Really, you can't respect even a week for something at that level. But originally, yeah, it didn't work in Chrome. And then I found out, oh, it actually does work, but it only works in Firefox. And there's no note on the website that says, please use Firefox, as ridiculous as that would even be. But yeah, on Firefox, it's still not great. The UI is awful, but at least it works. On Chrome, not a single thing works. Like you hit a button and it opens up like a calendar dialog, right? But on Chrome, the width and the height of the dialog are like 2 pixels. So you just see this thing pop up and it doesn't work. Or in other areas for the pop-ups, the buttons simply won't respond. And it's infuriating. And I would write them these little bug reports like, how are you okay with this? Does your dev team know that this thing doesn't work at all in Chrome? And it's been this way for months and months. How are you okay with this? I'm just venting because I had to deal with it today. We're all over the place. We're talking about CSS. We're talking about the Layercast Refresh and my annoying bank. Anyways, yeah, I'm at the light at the end of the tunnel for Layercast. I feel like I'm in the final week. In fact, let me pull up Wunderlist. A lot of people use like GitHub issues, but this is easier for me. Redesign tasks, 155 completed to-dos, and I have 4 open to-dos. But 2 of those are just kind of related to deployment steps I need to take because I have added a few things that I'm going to need to manually install. And I do that a lot for larger deploys that kind of require some kind of manual work, like remember to clear the cache, remember to populate this new column that I added, remember to run this command to fill everything up. It always stresses me out doing those big deploys, so I kind of write out every step I need to do. Again, for regular pushes throughout the day, no. But for a big deploy where the site goes down for a few minutes, or you can use Envoyer. But yeah, for those larger ones, I like to write out each step. And then for the other 2 items, they're pretty small. First item, fix profiles not showing code highlights. Yeah, I'm using TurboLinks for this updated refresh of the site. TurboLinks is so good, by the way. It's not something that requires Ruby or Ruby on Rails. It's a standalone JavaScript package that you could pull in now. And I bet you might even find that literally you just drop it in, include the script, and it'll start working. Possibly. More realistically, you'll find that you may need to make just a handful of JavaScript changes the way it works. Actually, I haven't explained TurboLinks. Let's move on to TurboLinks for item number 6 for this 4-minute podcast that's going to go 20 minutes. TurboLinks is pretty cool. It treats everything as like a single process. So rather than every click doing a full post back to the server and then reloading the CSS and the JavaScript and all of that, with TurboLinks, it essentially hijacks any anchor clicks for your current domain. And instead, it performs an XHR request, an AJAX request to your server. It receives the response, it cuts out the body tag, and then it inserts it into your page. So that means there are some memory things you might need to be aware of. And dependent upon how you write your JavaScript, you might have to do a couple things. So for example, maybe you have some jQuery wrapped in a document.ready. Well, that would run the very first time. But when you click on a link to go to a new page, remember, you're not doing a full postback. You're still in that same request or that same process. So you would instead need to use like a TurboLinks colon load event listener that they provide. And that will be triggered. That event will be triggered every time a new visit is made. You know, so just little things like that you would have to tweak. I'm also figuring out how to deal with some view component issues where the data binding falls out of sync. Right now, I'm just solving that by turning off the caching feature that TurboLinks offers, but I really don't want to do that. But right now, you have a thing. If I didn't turn it off, yeah, I would have a thing where, let's say you click on a page, it makes the AJAX request, everything works. But then if you were to click the back button, it will load that from their cache. And what's cool about that is when you hit back, it loads almost instantly. It's really, really fast because you're, again, not having to perform a full postback to get the data, to load the CSS and all of that stuff. But when you do that, yeah, the view data binding or the interactivity there falls out of sync. And so I don't yet know how to basically reapply those bindings with my components. I've done some research. It's weird. It's one of those things, I guess nobody's done it because I've seen one presentation on it and it didn't have any actual examples for how to do it. So I'm not sure if he's actually applied that to any real projects. If you've experienced this, please do contact me. I'm Jeffrey_Way at Twitter to figure out how this could work. And again, I thought it would be as simple as, once again, listen for the turbolinks:load event, and then you just new up your view again. But no, I guess that wouldn't work because it's pulling from the cache and the event listeners aren't going to catch. I don't know. You know what? I haven't totally figured it out just yet. I may not figure it out before the new Layercast refresh goes out. I may just hold off until there's more research on this. But anyways, so glad to have this almost done. I'm really looking forward to pushing it out. And then 5 minutes later, somebody creating a forum thread, pointing out all of the things they hate. It's easily my most favorite thing about pushing a big design update. And actually, even more than design, there's a good bit of new functionality there. The signup process or the flow, so to speak, has been completely overridden. I actually migrated over to Stripe Checkout since it's a lot more full-featured than when I originally wrote that stuff. And they do such a good job with that, with their little pop-up modal that does the automatic card detection and verification. It also allows me to add support for, is it Alipay or Alipay? As I understand it, it's like the PayPal for China. So that should add a new payment source for a huge number of people. I added support for Apple Pay, which is really cool. So on your current computer, like if you're in Safari, yeah, you can click the button. And then if your phone is nearby and has a card, you can just hit your thumbprint to try. You know, why am I explaining how Apple Pay works for you? Well, what's cool is if you have the new MacBook, every developer hates the new MacBook, it seems. I'm getting one, but I'm not even that excited. But yeah, I guess you can put your thumbprint on that magic touch bar without even using your phone, which is cool. So yeah, lots and lots of stuff in the pipeline. I can't wait to show it to you at some point in November 2016. I'll see you later.